Chapter 31. When that assembly was dismissed, the same chiefs of states who had before been to Caesar returned and asked that they might be allowed to treat with him privately, in secret, concerning the safety of themselves and of all. That request having been obtained, they all threw themselves in tears at Caesar's feet, saying that they no less begged and earnestly desired that what they might say should not be disclosed than that they might obtain those things which they wished for, inasmuch as they saw that if a disclosure was made, they should be put to the greatest tortures. For these Divitiacus the Aeduan spoke and told him that there were two parties in the whole of Gaul, that the Aedui stood at the head of one of these, the Arverni at the other. After these had been violently struggling with one another for the superiority for many years, it came to pass that the Germans were called in for hire by the Arverni and the Sequani, that about 15,000 of them, i.e. of the Germans, had at first crossed the Rhine, but after that these wild and savage men had become enamored of the lands and the refinement and the abundance of the Gauls. More were brought over, that there were now as many as 120,000 of them in Gaul. That with these, the Aedui and their dependents had repeatedly struggled in arms, that they had been routed and had sustained a great calamity, had lost all their nobility, all their senate, and all their cavalry, and that broken by such engagements and calamities, although they had formerly been very powerful in Gaul, both from their own valor and from the Roman people's hospitality and friendship, they were now compelled to give the chief nobles of their state as hostages to the Sequani, and to bind their state by an oath that they would neither demand hostages in return, nor supplicate aid from the Roman people, nor refuse to be forever under their sway and empire. That he was the only one out of all the state of the Aedui who could not be prevailed upon to take the oath or to give his children as hostages. On that account he had fled from his state and had gone to the Senate at Rome to beseech aid, as he alone was bound neither by oath nor hostages. But a worse thing had befallen the victorious Sequani than the vanquished Aedui, for Ariovistus, the king of the Germans, had settled in their territories and had seized upon a third of their land, which was the best in the whole of Gaul, and was now ordering them to depart from another third part, because a few months previously 24,000 men of the Hyrades had come to him, for whom room and settlements must be provided. The consequence would be that in a few years they would be all driven from the territories of Gaul, and all the Germans would cross the Rhine, for neither must the land of Gaul be compared with the land of the Germans, nor must the habit of living of the latter be put on a level with that of the former. Moreover, as for Ariovistus, no sooner did he defeat the forces of the Gauls in a battle, which took place at Magetobria, than he began to lord it haughtily and cruelly, to demand as hostages the children of all the principal nobles, and wreak on them every kind of cruelty, if everything was not done at his nod or pleasure. That he was a savage, passionate, and reckless man, and that his commands could no longer be borne. Unless there was some aid in Caesar and the Roman people, the Gauls must all do the same thing that the Helvetii had done, viz., emigrate from their country and seek another dwelling place, other settlements remote from the Germans, and try whatever fortune may fall to their lot. If these things were to be disclosed to Ariovistus, Divitiacus adds, that he doubts not that he would inflict the most severe punishment on all the hostages who are in his possession, and says that Caesar could, either by his own influence and by that of his army, or by his late victory, or by name of the Roman people, intimidate him, so as to prevent a greater number of Germans being brought over the Rhine, and could protect all Gaul from the outrages of Ariovistus. Chapter 32. When this speech had been delivered by Divitiacus, all who were present began with loud lamentation to entreat assistance of Caesar. Caesar noticed that the Sequani were the only people of all who did none of those things which the others did, but with their heads bowed down, gazed on the earth in sadness. Wondering what was the reason of this conduct, he inquired of themselves. No reply did the Sequani make, but silently continued in the same sadness. When he had repeatedly inquired of them and could not elicit any answer at all, the same Divitiacus the Aeduan answered that the lot of the Sequani was more wretched and grievous than that of the rest on this account, because they alone durst not even in secret complain or supplicate aid, and shuddered at the cruelty of Ariovistus, even when absent, just as if he were present. For to the rest, despite of everything, there was an opportunity of flight given, but all tortures must be endured by the Sequani, who had admitted Ariovistus within their territories, and whose towns were all in his power. Chapter 33. Caesar, on being informed of these things, cheered the minds of the Gauls with his words, and promised that this affair should be an object of his concern, saying that he had great hopes that Ariovistus, induced both by his kindness and his power, would put an end to his oppression. After delivering this speech, he dismissed the assembly. And, besides those statements, many circumstances induced him to think that this affair ought to be considered and taken up by him, especially as he saw that the Aedui, styled as they had been repeatedly by the Senate brethren and kinsmen, were held in the thraldom and dominion of the Germans, and understood that their hostages were with Ariovistus and the Sequani, which in so mighty an empire as that of the Roman people, he considered very disgraceful to himself and the Republic. That moreover the Germans should by decrees become accustomed to cross the Rhine, and that a great body of them should come into Gaul, he saw would be dangerous to the Roman people, and judged that wild and savage men would not be likely to restrain themselves, after they had possessed themselves of all Gaul, from going forth into the province and thence marching into Italy, as the Cimbri and Teutones had done before them, particularly as the Rhone was the sole barrier that separated the Sequani from our province. Against which events he thought he ought to provide as speedily as possible. Moreover, Ariovistus, for his part, had assumed to himself such pride and arrogance that he was felt to be quite insufferable. Chapter 34. He therefore determined to send ambassadors to Ariovistus to demand of him to name some intermediate spot for a conference between the two, saying that he wished to treat with him on state business and matters of the highest importance to both of them. To this embassy Ariovistus replied that if he himself had had need of anything from Caesar, he would have gone to him, and that if Caesar wanted anything from him, he ought to come to him. That besides, neither dare he go without an army into those parts of Gaul which Caesar had possession of, nor could he, without great expense and trouble, draw his army together in one place. That, to him, moreover, it appeared strange what business either Caesar or the Roman people had at all in his own Gaul, which he had conquered in war. Chapter 35. When these answers were reported to Caesar, he sends ambassadors to him a second time with this message. Since, after having been treated with so much kindness by himself and the Roman people, as he had in his consulship, B.C. 59, been styled king and friend by the Senate, he makes this recompense to Caesar himself and the Roman people, viz. That when invited to a conference he demurs, and does not think that it concerns him to advise and inform himself about an object of mutual interest, these are the things which he requires of him. First, that he do not any more bring over any body of men across the Rhine into Gaul. In the next place, that he restore the hostages which he has from the Aedui, and grant the Sequani permission to restore to them with his consent those hostages which they have, and that he neither provoke the Aedui by outrage, nor make war upon them or their allies. If he would accordingly do this, Caesar says that he himself and the Roman people will entertain a perpetual feeling of favor and friendship towards him. But that if he, Caesar, does not obtain his desires, that he, forasmuch as in the consulship of Marcus Messalia and Marcus Piso, in B.C. 61, the Senate had decreed that whoever should have the administration of the province of Gaul should, as far as he could do so consistently with the interests of the Republic, protect the Aedui and the other friends of the Roman people, will not overlook the wrongs of the Aedui. Chapter 36. To this, Ariovistus replied that the right of war was that they who had conquered should govern those whom they had conquered, in what manner they pleased. That in that way the Roman people were wont to govern the nations which they had conquered, not according to the dictation of any other, but according to their own discretion. If he, for his part, did not dictate to the Roman people as to the manner in which they were to exercise their right, he ought not to be obstructed by the Roman people in his right. That the Aedui, inasmuch as they had tried the fortune of war, and had engaged in arms and been conquered, had become tributaries to him, that Caesar was doing a great injustice, in that by his arrival he was making his revenues less available to him. That he should not restore their hostages to the Aedui, but should not make war wrongfully either upon them or their allies, if they abided by that which had been agreed on, and paid their tribute annually. If they did not continue to do that, the Roman people's name of brothers would avail them not. As to Caesar's threatening him that he would not overlook the wrongs of the Aedui, he said that no one had ever entered into a contest with him, Ariovistus, without utter ruin to himself. That Caesar might enter the lists when he chose. He would feel what the invincible Germans, well trained as they were beyond all others to arms, who for 14 years had not been beneath a roof, could achieve by their valor. Chapter 37. At the same time that this message was delivered to Caesar, ambassadors came from the Aedui and the Treviri. From the Aedui to complain that the Hirades, who had lately been brought over into Gaul, were ravaging their territories, that they had not been able to purchase peace from Ariovistus, even by giving hostages, and from the Treviri to state that 100 cantons of the Suevi had encamped on the banks of the Rhine and were attempting to cross it, that the brothers Nasuas and Cimberius headed them. Being greatly alarmed at these things, Caesar thought that he ought to use all dispatch, lest, if this new band of Suevi should unite with the old troops of Ariovistus, he, Ariovistus, might be less easily withstood. Having, therefore, as quickly as he could provided a supply of corn, he hastened to Ariovistus by forced marches. Chapter 38. When he had proceeded 3 days' journey, word was brought to him that Ariovistus was hastening with all his forces to seize on Vesontio, which is the largest town of the Sequani, and had advanced 3 days' journey from his territories. Caesar thought that he ought to take the greatest precautions lest this should happen, for there was in that town a most ample supply of everything which was serviceable for war, and so fortified was it by the nature of the ground as to afford a great facility for protracting the war, inasmuch as the river Doubs almost surrounds the whole town, as though it were traced round it with a pair of compasses. A mountain of great height shuts in the remaining space, which is not more than 600 feet, where the river leaves a gap, in such a manner that the roots of that mountain extend to the river's bank on either side. A wall thrown around it makes the citadel of this mountain, and connects it with the town. Hither Caesar hastens by forced marches by night and day, and, after having seized the town, stations a garrison there. Chapter 39. Whilst he is tarrying a few days at Vesontio, on account of corn and provisions, from the inquiries of our men and the reports of the Gauls and traders, who asserted that the Germans were men of huge stature, of incredible valor and practice in arms, that oft-times they, on encountering them, could not bear even their countenance, and the fierceness of their eyes. So great a panic, on a sudden, seized the whole army, as to discompose the minds and spirits of all in no slight degree. This first arose from the tribunes of the soldiers, the prefects and the rest, who, having followed Caesar from the city of Rome, from motives of friendship, had no great experience in military affairs. And alleging some of them with one reason, some another, which they said made it necessary for them to depart, they requested that by his consent they might be allowed to withdraw. Some, influenced by shame, stayed behind in order that they might avoid the suspicion of cowardice. These could neither compose their countenance, nor even sometimes check their tears, but hidden in their tents, either bewailed their fate or deplored with their comrades the general danger. Wills were sealed universally throughout the whole camp. By the expressions and cowardice of these men, even those who possessed great experience in the camp, both soldiers and centurions, and those, the decurions, who were in command of the cavalry, were gradually disconcerted. Some of them, as wished to be considered less alarmed, said that they did not dread the enemy, but feared the narrowness of the roads and the vastness of the forests which lay between them and Ariovistus, or else that the supplies could not be brought up readily enough. Some even declared to Kaiser that when he gave orders for the camp to be moved and the troops to advance, the soldiers would not be obedient to the command, nor advance in consequence of their fear. Chapter 40. When Kaiser observed these things, having called a council and summoned to it the centurions of all the companies, he severely reprimanded them, particularly for supposing that it belonged to them to inquire or conjecture either in what direction they were marching or with what object. That Ariovistus, during his, Kaiser's, consulship, had most anxiously sought after the friendship of the Roman people. Why should anyone judge that he would so rashly depart from his duty? He, for his part, was persuaded that when his demands were known and the fairness of the terms considered, he would reject neither his nor the Roman people's favor. But even if, driven on by rage and madness, he should make war upon them, what, after all, were they afraid of? Or why should they despair either of their own valor or of his zeal? Of that enemy a trial had been made within our father's recollection, when on the defeat of the Cimbrian Teutones by Caius Marius, the army was regarded as having deserved no less praise than their commander himself. It had been made lately, too, in Italy, during the rebellion of the slaves, whom, however, the experience and training which they had received from us assisted in some part, from which a judgment might be formed of the advantages which resolution carries with it, inasmuch as those whom for some time they had groundlessly dreaded when unarmed, they had afterwards vanquished when well-armed and flushed with success. In short, that these were the same men whom the Helvetii, in frequent encounters, not only in their own territories, but also in theirs, the German, have generally vanquished, and yet cannot have been a match for our army. If the unsuccessful battle and flight of the Gauls disquieted any, these, if they made inquiries, might discover that when the Gauls had been tired out by the long duration of the war, Ariovistus, after he had many months kept himself in his camp and in the marshes, and had given no opportunity for an engagement, fell suddenly upon them, by this time despairing of a battle, and scattered in all directions, and was victorious more through stratagem and cunning than valor. But though there had been room for such stratagem against savage and unskilled men, not even Ariovistus himself expected that thereby our armies could be entrapped. That those who ascribed their fear to a pretense about the deficiency of supplies and the narrowness of the roads acted presumptuously, as they seemed either to distrust their general's discharge of his duty or to dictate to him. That these things were his concern, that the Sequani, the Leuci, and the Lingones were to furnish the corn, and that it was already ripe in the fields, that as to the road they would soon be able to judge for themselves. As to its being reported that the soldiers would not be obedient to command, or advance, he was not at all disturbed at that, for he knew that in the case of all those whose army had not been obedient to command, either upon some mismanagement of an affair, fortune had deserted them, or that upon some crime being discovered, covetousness had been clearly proved against them. His integrity had been seen throughout his whole life, his good fortune in the war with the Helvetii, that he would therefore instantly set about what he had intended to put off till a more distant day, and would break up his camp the next night in the fourth watch, that he might ascertain as soon as possible whether a sense of honor and duty, or whether fear, had more influence with them. But that if no one else should follow, yet he would go with only the 10th legion, of which he had no misgivings, and it should be his praetorian cohort. This legion Kaiser had both greatly favored, and in it, on account of its valor, placed the greatest confidence. Chapter 41. Upon the delivery of this speech, the minds of all were changed in a surprising manner, and the highest ardor and eagerness for prosecuting the war were engendered, and the 10th Legion was the first to return thanks to him, through their military tribunes, for his having expressed this most favorable opinion of them, and assured him that they were quite ready to prosecute the war. Then the other legions endeavored, through their military tribunes and the centurions of the principal companies, to excuse themselves to Kaiser, saying that they had never either doubted or feared, or supposed that the determination of the conduct of the war was theirs and not their general's. Having accepted their excuse, and having had the road carefully reconnoitered by Divitiacus, because in him of all others he had the greatest faith, he found that by a circuitous route of more than 50 miles he might lead his army through open parts. He then set out in the fourth watch, as he had said he would. On the 7th day, as he did not discontinue his march, he was informed by scouts that the forces of Ariovistus were only 24 miles distant from ours. Chapter 42. Upon being apprised of Kaiser's arrival, Ariovistus sends ambassadors to him, saying that what he had before requested as to a conference might now, as far as his permission went, take place, since he, Kaiser, had approached nearer, and he considered that he might now do it without danger. Kaiser did not reject the proposal, and began to think that he was now returning to a rational state of mind, as he spontaneously proffered that which he had previously refused to him when requesting it, and was in great hopes that in consideration of his own and the Roman people's great favors towards him, the issue would be that he would desist from his obstinacy upon his demands being made known. The 5th day after that was appointed as the day of conference. Meanwhile, as ambassadors were being often sent to and fro between them, Ariovistus demanded that Kaiser should not bring any foot soldier with him to the conference, saying that he was afraid of being ensnared by him through treachery, that both should come accompanied by cavalry, that he would not come on any other condition. Kaiser, as he neither wished that the conference should, by an excuse thrown in the way, be set aside, nor durst trust his life to the cavalry of the Gauls, decided that it would be most expedient to take away from the Gallic cavalry all their horses, and thereon to mount the legionary soldiers of the 10th Legion, in which he placed the greatest confidence, in order that he might have a bodyguard as trustworthy as possible should there be any need for action. That Kaiser did more for them than he had promised. He had promised to have the 10th Legion in place of his Praetorian cohort, but he now converted them into horse. Chapter 43. There was a large plain, and in it a mound of earth of considerable size. This spot was at nearly an equal distance from both camps. Thither, as had been appointed, they came for the conference. Kaiser stationed the legion, which he had brought with him on horseback, 200 paces from this mound. The cavalry of Ariovistus also took their stand at an equal distance. Ariovistus then demanded that they should confer on horseback, and that besides themselves, they should bring with them 10 men each to the conference. When they were come to the place, Kaiser, in the opening of his speech, detailed his own and the Senate's favor towards him, Ariovistus, in that he had been styled king, in that he had been styled friend by the Senate, in that very considerable presents had been sent to him, which circumstance he informed him had both fallen to the lot of few, and had usually been bestowed in consideration of important personal services, that he, although he had neither an introduction nor a just ground for the request, had obtained these honors through the kindness and munificence of himself, Kaiser, and the Senate. He informed him, too, how old and how just were the grounds of connection that existed between themselves, the Romans, and the Aedui, what decrees of the Senate had been passed in their favor, and how frequent and how honorable, how from time immemorial the Aedui had held the supremacy of the whole of Gaul, even, said Kaiser, before they had sought our friendship. that it was the custom of the Roman people to desire not only that its allies and friends should lose none of their property, but be advanced in influence, dignity, and honor. Who then could endure that what they had brought with them to the friendship of the Roman people should be torn from them? He then made the same demands which he had commissioned the ambassadors to make, that Ariovistus should not make war either upon the Aedui or their allies, that he should restore the hostages, that if he could not send back to their country any part of the Germans, he should at all events suffer none of them any more to cross the Rhine. Chapter 44. Ariovistus replied briefly to the demands of Caesar, but expatiated largely on his own virtues, that he had crossed the Rhine not of his own accord, but on being invited and sent for by the Gauls, that he had not left home and kindred without great expectations and great rewards, that he had settlements in Gaul, granted by the Gauls themselves, that the hostages had been taken by their own good will, that he took by right of war the tribute which conquerors are accustomed to impose on the conquered, that he had not made war upon the Gauls, but the Gauls upon him, that all the states of Gaul came to attack him and had encamped against him, that all their forces had been routed and beaten by him in a single battle, that if they chose to make a second trial, he was ready to encounter them again, but if they chose to enjoy peace, it was unfair to refuse the tribute, which of their own free will they had paid up to that time, that the friendship of the Roman people ought to prove to him an ornament and a safeguard, not a detriment, and that he sought with it that expectation. But if through the Roman people the Senate was to be discontinued, and those who surrendered to be seduced from him, he would renounce the friendship of the Roman people no less heartily than he had sought it. As to his leading over a host of Germans into Gaul, that he was doing this with a view of securing himself, not of assaulting Gaul. That there was evidence of this, in that he did not come without being invited, and in that he did not make war, but merely warded it off. That he had come into Gaul before the Roman people. That never before this time did a Roman army go beyond the frontiers of the province of Gaul. What, said he, does Caesar desire? Why come into his, Ariovistus's, domains? That this was his province of Gaul, just as that is ours. As it ought not to be pardoned in him, if he were to make an attack upon our territories, so likewise that we were unjust to obstruct him in his prerogative. As for Caesar's saying that the Aedui had been styled brethren by the Senate, he was not so uncivilized, nor so ignorant of affairs, as not to know that the Aedui in the very last war with the Allobroges had neither rendered assistance to the Romans, nor received any from the Roman people in the struggles which the Aedui had been maintaining with him and with the Sequani. He must feel suspicious that Caesar, though feigning friendship as the reason for his keeping an army in Gaul, was keeping it with the view of crushing him, and that unless he depart and withdraw his army from these parts, he shall regard him not as a friend, but as a foe, and that even if he should put him to death, he should do what would please many of the nobles and leading men of the Roman people. He had assurance of that from themselves through their messengers, and could purchase the favor and friendship of them all by his, Caesar's, death. But if he would depart and resign to him the free possession of Gaul, he would recompense him with a great reward, and would bring to a close whatever wars he wished to be carried on, without any trouble or risk to him. Chapter 45. Many things were stated by Caesar to the effect to show why he could not waive the business, in that neither his nor the Roman people's practice would suffer him to abandon most meritorious allies, nor did he deem that Gaul belonged to Ariovistus rather than to the Roman people, that the Arverni and the Ruteni had been subdued in war by Quintus Fabius Maximus, and that the Roman people had pardoned them and had not reduced them into a province, or imposed a tribute upon them. And if the most ancient period was to be regarded, then was the sovereignty of the Roman people in Gaul most just. If the decree of the Senate was to be observed, then ought Gaul to be free, which they, the Romans, had conquered in war, and had permitted to enjoy its own laws.